This podcast on Sports360AZ.com is brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. We appreciate the Valley Hyundai dealers and their support.
Now, the Brad Sessmann Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Great Monday. Thanks for being with us. Kurt Warner's weekend. We will go through that on today's show, the Hall of Fame speeches. I know there's a lot that's been written and said now about how the speeches went way too long and just took forever and all that stuff. And, you know, sometimes we just don't have to be in the moment of everything being lightning fast and you should just enjoy it. I sat there Saturday night and I never sit there for long periods of time and without moving. And I'm always like, oh, I've got to get to this. I got to get to that. And before I knew it, LaDainian Tomlinson and Jerry Jones and Kurt Warner were done. And yeah, it took two and a half hours. I got caught up on Twitter on the other speeches. And I was really just very pleased to hear LaDainian Tomlinson's speech and Kurt's speech. And there were some things in Jerry Jones' speech that I liked too. So the night was... It was good. Saturday night was good. I don't know if you were in a space where you watched it or if you DVR'd it and checked it out or if you've not seen it yet. I would encourage you to go back and listen to these speeches. Tomlinson's speech at the end was unbelievable. Jerry Jones talking about the business side. There's people that hate Jerry Jones and hate on him and all that stuff. This guy's in the Hall of Fame. And for those of you that are all wound up, do you feel like Kurt Warner shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame? Guess what? He's in the Hall of Fame. Deal with it. And if you don't understand what he was able to overcome, it's not just the stocking of grocery shelves and a nice, cool little story. The guy won. The guy got to big events. So I know that we always want to find things to nitpick apart, but I thought the weekend was really good on the Hall of Fame front. It was a terrible weekend for the Diamondbacks. Just awful. You don't blow 4-0 leads in San Francisco. You just don't on Saturday night. And yesterday they looked flat, booted the ball around. Now they come into the stretch of the schedule. Oh, my gosh. You know, you've got three with the Dodgers tomorrow night. You've got three with the Cubs this coming weekend. And then you have Houston here. And you have to go to Houston. It's a really hard stretch for a team that's just kind of teetering there. You know, they look good for 3-4 days. I thought the games in Chicago were hard-fought games. And they go to San Francisco on Friday night. I watch most of that game. And then they just crapped the bed on Saturday. There's no other way to put it. And yesterday was disappointing. There was a lot around the Kyrie Irving stuff over the weekend with the Suns that I'll get to. Saturday, I went up to Camp Tanazona. Really enjoyed that. So there's plenty I'm going to get to on today's show. We'll have Yogi Roth with us today, Pac-12 network analyst. I really like his work, his analyzation of what's going on at both U of A and ASU for the Wildcats and Sun Devils, how this is not supposed to be a great season. And yet, guys, as I'm up there at Camp T, I felt like, you know, there's some things here that if they can actually get a pass rush and if they can play just a little bit in the secondary, they're going to be all right. And then I'm hearing out of U of A that Brandon Dawkins has been really good at quarterback, and you saw what U of A did last year to ASU, just kicked them all over the field. So maybe it's not going to be as bad a college year as some are making it out to be, and then you have NAU and Jerome Sowers, if they can stay healthy, and even right down to ACU doing what they're doing. So, and the high schools get going this week, some scrimmages. I went out to a scrimmage on Friday night right near my house, wanted to go check out a quarterback that ASU has offered, so... I'm totally fired up for the start of the football season, but we have a baseball team that's in the midst of a race. We have Cody Bellinger coming here tomorrow night. It's going to be awesome. It's just a great week ahead. Eric is with us now. So we're going to get in on LaDainian Tomlinson. You were fired up to hear LaDainian Tomlinson speak because you are a Horned Frog. And when he spoke on Saturday night, did it resonate with you?
It did, because he said things that I didn't even know about, and I know quite a bit about his past.
You are an aficionado, yes.
I am. If you see what I have of him in our house between jerseys and...
Oh, you're one of those guys.
Not fanatically like that, but I do have a... Not a shrine, but I do have some LT stuff.
You bow down?
No,
kiss the frog?
No. I just thought what he said on Saturday night was, I think I told you this morning, it was transcending. It was more than just it started out as football, and then it reached a much bigger mass of people from one side of the country to the other side of the country. Some are saying from one side of the world to the other side of the world.
Sure.
And I just I was pretty impressed. And his pitch and his delivery and everything was phenomenal.
So he talked about the name Tomlinson and where it came from. And if you've not seen it, it's up on YouTube, I'm sure. It's at places. Over on Warner's speech, so I felt bad for Kurt Warner in this respect. I thought his speech was fine, okay? But when you're sitting there like he was sitting there for as long as he had to sit there, I don't care who you are. If you've done any amount of public speaking, he's done it at a much larger level than I have consistently. You've got to just want to get it out of your system. And he ended up being the last guy to speak. So the energy in the room, I'm sure, in the facility, the Cowboys, after Jerry Jones spoke, all the Cowboy players got up and left. They had to get out of there.
Because the event was over 4 hours long by the time
Kurt
hit the stage.
I'm fine with. Do you think these guys should have 15 minutes?
I would prefer to see them a little bit shorter.
I know Clark Judge submitted that over on Top of Fame.
I mean, 4 hours is a long time.
Well,
and it almost went 5 hours. But it is their moment, and no one should be able to take away their moment because they earned it. If they want to sit up there and talk for 60 minutes, I guess that's their right to do so. It is their moment.
Well, it's a Saturday night, the first week in August, on the NFL Network. So let's just start there.
Yep.
That the NFL Network needs programming.
I was about to say, they had no complaints.
They had no complaints. Are you kidding me? So they were able to just roll with it. I heard Kenny Easley went into Black Lives Matter, and that offended some people and rubbed some people the wrong way. LaDainian Tomlinson's part, and I didn't see Kenny Easley's speech. I heard Morton Anderson's was very funny. I need to go back and see Morton Anderson's. The highlight of Kurt's speech, though, to me, was when he decided to honor Trent Green. You and I sat here on Friday. I listened back to our show, and we talked about, I'm sure that he's going to talk about Isaac Bruce and Marshall. He didn't. He didn't go by any person. He didn't go to Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin. He didn't do any of that. And that's fine. I'm not being critical of him. He decided to go a different route. Because for him to thank all of the former players as everybody else has done, he didn't say, I want to thank the Arizona Cardinals. And I'm fine with that. He doesn't have to say that. And he's in a tough spot because his story of stocking shelves is what a lot of people know him for. Unfortunately, I think in his space, there were people that didn't know his backstory. When you assume that everybody knows what you're all about, you shouldn't assume that. It's the Hall of Fame. There are people that just wanted to see Jerry Jones. And, oh, wait, here's Kurt Warner. Wow, I didn't know all this. You can't just assume that everybody knows your story in this day and age. You may think they do. And so he did go down that path. The most emotional part, we have a clip of it here, was Kurt and talking about his mother. This was from the speech, Kurt Warner's Hall of Fame speech on Saturday night.
I remember calling home and telling my mom I was considering transferring or just quitting altogether. The words on the other end of the line that night, coming from the person I admired most, would forever alter my perspective. She told me to be grateful for my opportunity, even if it didn't look like I wanted it to look. To never stop working or preparing because God had a plan, and I needed to be ready when He showed it to me. And lastly, that I wasn't a quitter, and we would get through this together. I was reminded of watching my mom do those exact things. She gratefully worked 3 jobs, sacrificing so my brother and I could have more, all while enduring things no person signs up for. She consistently demonstrated hard work, commitment to your responsibilities, and how even when life doesn't give you what you want, you never stop believing. Mom, so much of who you see today was formed from what I saw in you. The spirit of perseverance that runs through my veins and which has defined my career were without question passed down by you.
Okay, so if that doesn't get you choked up, and I think being moved, this is the old Jim Valvano line, Be moved to emotions, laugh, think, cry every day, right? That's a good day. It's a really good day. That's from the Jimmy V speech. If you didn't get moved in watching a guy like Kurt Warner and know how many times he must have said, I have to quit this, or why is it that this isn't happening? Why is it? He shared a story about how they ran out of gas.
That was a great story. It's just a great story. I'll let you tell the story, but I'm glad that you prompted that because I was going to share that too. So go ahead.
No, I mean, he runs out of gas and he just had that moment where I can't put my family in harm's way. Any man has to have that feeling. I have four kids, right? I have that feeling. Any man has to have that feeling when there's others that are dependent upon you. Interesting is when he thanked Al Luganville. So in a strange sort of way, I can sit here and tell you that Al and I are like third cousins. And I covered Al in San Diego, and we found out sitting at a high school stadium that we were related down the line. And Al was here at Arizona State back in the Cush days. Al was here and still lives here. He's in South Chandler. Saw Al about 6 months ago. And so he went out of his way to thank a guy like Al Luganville, who was the only guy on the face of the planet that was calling him. But guys, as you're sitting there doing your thing today, I think all of us probably have that moment of, why am I continually beating my head against the wall in whatever profession it is? Doesn't matter, right? Doesn't matter. The great ones have those moments. I very seldom have run across an athlete in doing this for as long as I've done it that hasn't had that moment of, I can't do this anymore. I'm not talented enough. I'm not gifted enough. Or for whatever reason, it's just not happening. And so for Kurt to go out of his way to share that story and to open up and be that intimate, I thought was really cool on his part. The way that he finished his speech, that's Kurt Warner. Yeah, on social media, there's always going to be that guy or that group. I wish they would have left religion out of it. That's him. That's what makes him tick. And so it's like LaDainian Tomlinson did not talk about running over the Oakland Raiders or the Kansas City Chiefs in his speech at great length. Instead, he talked about the name Tomlinson and how it became from his great-great-great-grandfather who came over from Africa as a slave. I mean, that's what you want. And so the length of it had nothing to do for me. I mean, Eric, you share this with me. You learned something about LT you never knew.
Yeah, I knew everything about Tomlinson Hill and where he grew up and how he used to be a fullback and obviously all of his TCU history.
Right.
But dating all the way back to his great-great-great-great ancestors who came over as slaves, I did not know that.
No, I mean, that's...
And so, he was very captivating. I mean, the audience was... You could tell the audience was very captivated by what LT was saying. Not to say that they weren't by some of the others, but his message was just so unique.
And I think Kurt's was too.
Yep.
I think that, you know, for people that felt like Kurt had a rough start, I think Kurt's sitting there for 5 hours, four and a half hours, anybody's going to have a bit of a rough start just to get the anxiety out of the way.
And he said, I guess the teleprompter went down a couple times and the weather wasn't great. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
It happens. Yeah. And much like the Spanos is getting booed by all the Charger fans in attendance at in Canton, it happens.
Well, so. There's stuff like the Spanos is getting booed. The cutaway shot of Ezekiel Elliott when Jerry Jones is up there doing his speech and Ezekiel's just texting away on his phone and not even looking up at him. I mean, there's just things.
That's a bad look.
That's a bad look. Come on. Put your phone away. I don't care if it's for a few seconds. The NFL Network decided to do the cutaway of Ezekiel Elliott while Jerry Jones is in full speech just texting.
Especially considering you're off-season, Zeke. Just put your phone away. Just, it can wait. Whatever it is, it can wait.
Do this, young man. Do this. And listen.
That's all you have to do.
And look engaged. Just look engaged. You're not going to reach into your pocket. In fact, give me your phone. Do something, anything. Go put you in a seat by yourself. You understand that the suspension is coming and that people are not on your bandwagon. So... on the other side, we're going to get into the Diamondbacks and Cody Bellinger coming here. Anquan Boldin signed with the team today. We always like to see where Q ends up. The Jay Cutler story in Miami is of interest to me. and what's going on with Kyrie Irving and the Suns and that front, too. We'll have Yogi Roth here in about 10 minutes. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Our television show airs 16 times per week on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sesmat, Football AZ. We are self-funded. We appreciate those who sponsor us. Please make sure you support those that do if you like what we do every day, not just here, but also on the website. Back in a minute. All right, I'm going to get over to Camp Tanazona in a bit. We have some video from being up there, and we'll probably do that this segment. Some news on Marvin Bagley that is breaking that you guys know that if you've watched me through the years do the show, one of the most disappointing stories in my view is him leaving high school here, and there's some twists and turns that are taking place with him today. So I'm going to get into that. But first, I think this is a big week for baseball and a big week for the Diamondbacks. And I will use the term litmus test, even though we're coming up on the dog days of August. Dog days of the baseball season are usually around now up until Labor Day. There are benchmarks during the course of a baseball season. You have Memorial Day. You find out by then where you are in the standings, if your team's any good, if they have a shot. Then you're at the 4th of July. You look at your team and say, you know what? We are going to be able to make a run. Let's go do something. Then you go to the baseball trade deadline. You get that out of the way. Then you go for about a week or so, see where you're playing after the deadline, get your team to settle. And then you go through the dog days, which is what we are coming up to now. The Diamondbacks still have a 5-game lead in the wild card on Milwaukee. But this week is a week that they have not faced. So they have the Dodgers here for 3. We have not seen the Dodgers here with Cody Bellinger. Cody Bellinger last night hit his 32nd home run of the season, and he didn't even start the year with the Dodgers. 16 of his home runs have been hit in the 7th inning or later. Cody Bellinger, former Hamilton High School Husky out in Chandler, has absolutely destroyed the baseball. He is the rookie of the year in the National League without question. He is a hometown kid coming back to Phoenix tomorrow night. He's already here in town. Tomorrow night for 3 games with the Dodgers. Beyond Cody Bellinger absolutely crushing it, the machine of the Dodgers is like this. The Dodgers are on pace to win 114 games this season. The Dodgers are 24-3 since the 4th of July. 24 wins, 3 losses since the 4th of July.
It's not supposed to happen in baseball. It's just not, that's not the way baseball is supposed to go. You don't go 24-3. You don't win 24 of 27 games in baseball.
Let's remember this, too. Last 10 days, 12 days, Kershaw's been on the DL.
Yep.
24-3.
Stupid.
And I've had some people that have said, well, it's the best team that money can buy. Yes, they've added Yu Darvish. Okay. Cody Bellinger was not the best that money can buy. Cody Bellinger was a prospect that grew up in the system.
As was Jock Peterson.
And Seager.
Was Corey Seager. Yep.
So when people go down the narrative of, oh, well, they're just throwing money and it's so unfair. No, it's not. Yeah, making Yu Darvish part of your rotation as a rent-a-player, what's the difference between that and what the Diamondbacks are doing with J.D. Martinez? Okay? They're adding somebody of substance and significance for the push. So you look at all the young players the Dodgers have brought in. Adrian Gonzalez is at Oklahoma City trying to rehab his back. He hadn't even been around. He's been hurt.
The Rockies are in second place in the NL West. The Rockies are 16 games over 500. They're 15 and a half games back of the Dodgers. Think about that.
The Dodgers' magic number is 36.
Oh, my gosh.
On
August 7th.
August 7th, magic number for the Dodgers to clinch postseason.
It's insane.
So you know, you're going to have all these numbers around the Dodgers to look at for 3 nights or 3 games. Then you're going to have the Cubs roll in here this week. And the Cubs are getting better. The Diamondbacks took 2 of 3 from them. We all know what it's going to be like at the ballpark the next 6 days. I'm going Wednesday night. The next 6 days, it's going to be a Dodgers convention, and it's going to be a Cubs convention. That's just the way it is. The Diamondbacks can try as hard as they want to get Sedona Red out there, or on Thursday when they wear their throwbacks. It's not going to matter. when the bandwagon jumping Dodger fans are out there, or, and I think this is more important and really cool, when you're a baseball fan, and in my case, you're just a fan of sport, right? If you're a fan of sport, how do you not want to go out and see Cody Bellinger and the Dodgers, hometown kid, just coming into his own, or then see the Cubs for three games? And then you have a team like Houston, which is below a lot of people's radars here in Arizona, but Houston's really, really good. And so the Diamondbacks, you know, did not play well over the weekend. Do you see? Did you watch any of their games? You were at Metallica, right?
I was at Metallica on Friday, so I was following the game on my phone when I could, and I did
what
not.
What are you talking about?
I did not see any of the games. I like
you're
to follow. It doesn't matter.
You're
I like to follow this team.
Are you kidding me? Is it? You're a Metallica, and you're doing this while Metallica's performing? Yeah, are you nuts?
Just every now and again. Hey, if Ezekiel Elliott can you know, be on his phone during the Hall of Fame, I can occasionally be on my phone during the Metallica concert.
Now, when you go to Metallica, do you let your hair down?
What hair I have of it?
Do you have the Metallica T-shirt?
I don't.
Do you let all your piercings, put all your piercings in?
I have none, so that would be a no.
That'd
no.
be a no, too?
It was nice to go to a concert and not be the oldest person there for once.
Wow.
Because a lot of the bands that I like are more younger, hip, you know, alternative type bands. And Metallica, you had guys there in their 60s, you know, 50s.
Was it a good crowd?
60-some-odd thousand people.
No, but was it? I mean, there's...
It was a great show and a great crowd.
Okay.
Because going into it, I was like, wow, I really want to see Metallica, Brad, but I cannot believe how much money I paid for this ticket to go see Metallica.
Yeah.
And by the end of the night, it was...
You would have paid more.
I don't know if I would have paid more, but I'm glad that I went and I had no problem paying what I paid.
Yeah. But just because a lot of people go to something doesn't make it any good.
I mean, my wife and I could probably take a short vacation for how much I paid for my single ticket.
But you enjoyed it.
Loved it.
Yeah. But you're enjoying it while you're watching a baseball game in August on your phone.
I wasn't watching it. I was just following
it. I would have slapped your phone out of your hands. Like, put that thing away.
I have ADD. I'm not afraid to admit that.
No, it's fine.
And you have ADD.
What are you talking about?
Exactly.
On the other side, we're going to have Yogi Roth with us, Pac-12 Network analyst on ASU and U of A. And why, if any, should there be hope for this season? What does Rich Rod have to do with U of A and Todd Graham with ASU to have a season of substance? We'll talk with Pac-12 Network analyst Yogi Roth about that and much more as we continue on. Sports360AZ.com. We have plenty of content up on our website that you can check out. We're Arizona-centric. High school, college, pro. Makes no difference to us. Just things that we see are a little different. We're Sprouts and Whole Foods in a world of Walmart. That's how we like to put it. Back after this timeout. Now let's do a deeper dive on what's going on around the great state with the start of college football season. And I know the ASU and U of A fans are like, come on, Brad, this is going to be a lost year and we may have two new coaches by the end of this season. I get it. That's what I've heard. But I do think there's talent out there. I do think that there's some players to look forward to. And there's no question it's a big, big year for both Todd Graham and Rich Rodriguez. Expectations are low here, but the Sun Devil and Wildcat fans want to see success. Yogi Roth joins us from the Pac-12 Network. And, of course, we've had Yogi on before. Breaks it down with quarterbacks, breaks it down across the conference, does deep dives, and much, much more. Okay, with the back stretch there, you just came from Camp T. What do you make out of Todd Graham and what's going on up there?
Well, it's exciting. I mean, fundamentally in training camp anywhere, it's unique just because every team's undefeated, right? And when you go to Camp T, if you're a football buff, you know the history of Coach Kush and everything they've done there. And it drops you into a different world for a little while. You know, you kind of think you're on Remember the Titans or you're watching The Program or Friday Night Lights or Varsity Blues, something along those lines. So for me, it's always really exciting going to a setting like that. For this generation, you know, their phones don't work. Every night they've got a campfire session and, you know, the bonding obviously is unique. Fans, they like that, but they want to know if they're going to be good and if they're going to win. And I totally get that. I do think to reference your point off the top, I think it's a little unjust, the criticism when you look at the reality of where they were last year. I think any coach, any team in the country that loses four quarterbacks and has to play a true freshman in this conference is going to struggle. You know, so I'm excited to see them at full strength. and see what they can do in this conference. I think Todd Graham is, we've kind of grown to love his ability to not shy away from any questions. So I'm excited to see how they bounce back.
Okay, Manny Wilkins, Blake Barnett, in your mind, is there a quarterback battle here in Tempe?
Well, I think, honestly, you know, these two kids, young men, I've known for a long time. Blake being the Elite 11 MVP a couple years ago, Manny being at the Elite 11 as well, the year Deshaun Watson was in it. I've seen them evolve from 15, 16, 17-year-old young men into, you know, real men right now. And when I look at them, I honestly thought after one day of evaluation at Camp T, they both are starters in the Pac-12 Conference. They've got the skill set. They have the acumen. Regardless of their background, because I think that's kind of out the window once you get on a college campus, the way they handle themselves, how they walk down to the practice field. I like getting there early to just see how they warm up. What are they saying to their teammates? How are they operating? Obviously, everything within the actual practice, but all the little things. And where I think this, for me, where it sits right now is that Manny's ahead of him in my eyes. Not only was he running with the ones, you could read all those reports every day, you know, regardless of wherever you're reading them online. But I thought that his command was unique. He's always been a guy who sets the tempo in a room. You know, I call it DQs, dude qualities, where you walk in and not only do people feel your presence, but you elevate the ability of all those around you. I think he does that. You know, I saw him talking to one of their transfer wide receivers in the walkthrough saying, okay, in the red zone, I need you to come out of it and I need you to, you know, burst out of your route and I'm going to throw it high in the corner of the end zone. Then they did an individual. Then they did it in 7-7. And they scored against the first team defense in red zone offense versus defense. And to me, that was a little subtle example of his command. I think it's masterful in this offense. And most importantly, probably with that side of the ball, I think you have to look at their new offensive coordinator. I mean, it was really evident in terms of how they're going to be able to scheme people. I think his background is really unique. I'm excited about that direction of this team. And I think if you're an ASU fan, you should be fired up for Billy Napier and what he's bringing to the table.
Flip the script then, Yogi, and go to Tucson. And what do you see there at the quarterback position for Rich Rod?
I'm really excited to get down there. I'll be there next week. I'm really looking forward to seeing it because it is competitive. Right, you've got obviously the incumbent in Brandon Dawkins. You've got the two Tates, right, the young one and then the old one. I'm kind of excited to see how they shake out because there is something to the maturity of the room with the transfer quarterback they have coming in Donovan Tate. You know, I think he's about to be 27 in early September. You know, he was I think in the third pick of the draft a couple years ago in Major League Baseball. He's been through a lot in his life, well documented. And I think that brings a sense of elevation to the room. And I think there's an element of professionalism. You know, I look back in my career, and Larry Fitzgerald was my college roommate. And when Larry walked into the University of Pittsburgh day one, he carried himself like a pro because he'd been around pros. His dad was a journalist. He was around Kirby Puckett in the dugout. He was around Chris Carter, Randy Moss, Randall Cunningham, you know, the Vikings back in the day. And I think it's always important to notice when baseball players specifically come into college, because it happens a lot because they have the deal usually in their contract where they get their education paid for. To me, it's a really impressive thing to watch because they know how to be a pro because they've had to do it really on levels that Division I A athletes can't even compare to. Mm-hmm. They're on these buses, you know, driving overnight in the middle of these tiny little, you know, little towns in the middle of nowhere. You know, they have to just kind of survive on PB&J and, you know, they don't have the greatest, you know, training table. And I know because I used to be a bat boy for a AAA baseball team back when I was a kid. So I saw the difference between being a pro locker room and one in the minor league. So I'm excited for the battle. Whoever wins it, they have to be able to process really well. In this conference, it is, and I don't say it because I work for the Pac-12 Network, but I say it because I've been studying this game for a long time. The defenses are so uniquely different each week. You're not seeing, you know, just simple too high coverage like you're seeing a lot of times in the Big 12. You're not seeing man free like you see a lot of times in the SEC or what is now known as the match coverage, which is basically two deep safeties, but they can play the run and it's man to man underneath. You're not just seeing that. You're seeing so many different things. And in this offense, with the tempo that Rich Rod wants to go with, you got to be able to process. And you have to go all the way back to Anu Solomon's redshirt freshman year to see when he was healthy, he could process that offense really well. And if you look back at Rich Rod's career, outside of his first year, I think, at Arizona, he hasn't had somebody that's been kind of an incumbent coming back. You know, we were so excited about that with Anu Solomon,
right,
you know, the last couple of years, but clearly that didn't work out. So it'd be fun to see what happens. I think he's got three guys that'll probably be able to impact the position. We didn't even talk about his son, who might have the best football acumen out of all of them just because he's been around the game for so long. So they got to decide real quick who's going to get the most reps, and I'm sure they'll figure it out after the first week of camp.
Talking with Yogi Roth, we've got about a minute and a half left in the segment. I guess from the big view in the sky of the Pac-12 South, for Arizona State and Arizona to be factors this year in the South, what has to happen other than USC's got to fall flat on its face? But what needs to happen out in the state this year?
Well, I think for both of them, both teams, they got to be healthy. I mean, you look at, I mean, Rich Rod would tell you, he doesn't pull any punches. To have your starting wide receiver have to play tailback last year is, that's rough, man. You know, I mean, that quarterback position, to have Dylan Sterling Cole have to play that position at ASU, that's tough, specifically when you looked at the guys that were ahead of him and, you know, humming in the season, you're probably pretty comfortable if you're Todd Graham about the quarterback spot. They got to stay healthy first and foremost because the margin for error is so small. The other thing is for ASU specifically, they got to create turnovers. You know, when they won 10 games and they were the one or two team in the Pac-12 in turnover differential, you know, I think it was at 30 and 33 turnovers created. Last year, they were 11th in the conference, like 99th in the country. And they were, you know, only created 17 turnovers. I mean, that's where his defense got going. Mm-hmm. I think you see a change in their defense this year. They go back to what they did in 2011 and 2012 when he was running it. The guy who taught him defense is now his defensive coordinator. So I think for ASU, they got to create some turnovers. And for Arizona, they can't give up explosive plays. I mean, you just can't do it on the back end. They try to go so fast. And when you go so fast on offense, if you're giving up touchdowns and points on the other side quickly, all of a sudden, if you go three and out, two drives in a row, it could be 14-0. And for me, when you have a lot of injuries, for Arizona specifically, all of a sudden you're out of your flow. And their flow is very consistent. They want to go fast. They want to go up-tempo. They want to pound the rock. Well, if you're not moving the ball and the other team is, it really hampers teams that are trying to be up-tempo because all of a sudden it gets ugly in a hurry. And then you've got to change your scheme, become a team that's just going to throw and chuck the ball down the field, which I don't think is necessarily a strength of theirs.
Yeah. No, it's good points all the way around. I think your thought on defensively on both programs, especially in the back end, both with U of A and ASU, that really seems to be the weak spot this year if they can get that figured out. I think both of them have the potential to be better than what people are saying right now, but it's an awfully big if. So,
yeah, and I'll tell you what, I mean, I light up the back end as much as anybody watching a broadcast, but they got to get pressure on the defensive front. You know, JoJo Wicker needs to be a star. You know, the Arizona needs to find somebody in that defensive front that can impact, disrupt the game. Because here's the reality is that these quarterbacks in this conference are pretty good. You've got to get the ball out of their hands. You've got to disrupt the timing of an offense. You can't ask, I don't care if you're a Dory Jackson, you know, the number one corner in the country, or a redshirt freshman who's never played before at one of these two schools who will probably get on the field. You can't ask them to hold up forever. The receivers are too good. I mean, it's always advantage offense, in my opinion. So I think both of these teams need to find an elite pass rusher and not have to scheme it. Arizona State tried to scheme it last year too much. Didn't have the players and got beat in the back end all day long. And we light up that portion of the defense, which is fair to a degree, but they must create something up front. And what I saw, at least in one day, is I was impressed in the variety of blitzes, where they're bringing pressures, how they're moving the JoJo Wickers all over that defensive line. So if they can do that, I think the schedule's set up for both of them to start off really hot, really confident, and then see what happens when they get the Pac-12 play.
As always, appreciate the time and visit. Thanks, Yogi.
You got it.
Yogi Roth there with the Pac-12 Network. He joins us in great content from Yogi, as always. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Our weekly Brad Sussmat Football AZ show, 16 airings a week, 64 times a month on Fox Sports Arizona. And their families, we appreciate their support as well. We're back with more after this timeout. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Appreciate you being with us. It is a good Monday. And, of course, our football show, Brad Sussmat Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona. Appreciate the partnership with them. 16 airings this week with the Dodgers in town, the Cubs in town. What a week that is going to be. I saw on social media where Archie Bradley reached out to Kurt Warner and asked Kurt if he could get an autographed jersey. This was last night. I'm sure Kurt is just getting buried with requests. And we are one of those. We sent a couple texts to Kurt, and Kurt Warner is nice enough to join us on the show. Now a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Kurt Warner on the program. How are you, Kurt? Congratulations.
I'm good, Brad. How are you?
It's great. Great to hear your voice and just the general reaction. Has it all sunk in yet for you?
No, not yet. So hard to make sense of it all and figure it all out. But the family and I had a great weekend and fun to be a part of it and get to know some of the other Hall of Famers beyond the helmet and the football side of things. So it was enjoyable.
What is the moment just a few days removed that sticks out to you the most?
I think the moments that stick out the most are what nobody else gets to see. And you're sitting down with some of these other guys, these Hall of Famers that you watched on the field, and you remember them as football players, but you don't really know them as people.
Right.
And you get a chance to sit down and find out who they are and what they're doing now. And the idea that, so many of these guys are just such great character guys and are doing such great things with their lives that, quite frankly, I never heard about, I never knew about. Mm. And that was the coolest part is, not just celebrating the accomplishments and what happened on the field, but getting to know them and understanding that the group that I'm joining from a character perspective.
Do you have an example you could share? A moment?
Mel Blount was one guy that we sat down with before the parade on Saturday. And first of all, the guy's an enormous human being. It's amazing to think that the guy played cornerback in the NFL. But just finding out the work that he's doing with at-risk kids on his farm and how he's trying to impact character and impact lives now through the program that he's running. So that's just one example of what these guys are doing and how they're still continuing to give back to their communities.
Talking with Kurt Warner now into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. His weekend is complete from Canton back in the Valley. What about your kids in your circle? Were you looking at them like, yeah, it's cool dad's up here, but they probably met people they had no idea and how that went with your whole family that was there?
Well, the craziest part is I didn't see them much. I was from one event to another and doing one thing or another thing, and so I didn't get to see the family all that much outside of the parties that I had at night. That was one of the hardest parts was just not sharing those intimate moments with them. But not seeing them, I would ask them, I hope you guys are having fun. What's going on? And I mean, every one of them was like, oh my gosh, this has been awesome. So they all had unbelievable times. It was just unfortunate that we didn't get a chance to really enjoy some of those moments with them as you were taking part in all the other things that they had for you at the Hall of Fame.
We're talking with Kurt Warner, Hall of Famer now in the National Football League and the Football Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame over the weekend. Your speech, did you write it yourself? Did you have people work with you? How many drafts did you go through on your speech?
No, I did it myself. There was basically just one draft that just kept being shaped and changed and trying to get it how I wanted to get it. So, it was something I wanted to do on my own. Wanted it to be my words and what I wanted to say to the different individuals and share the story that I wanted to share. So I made sure that it was something at the end of the day that I guess I was responsible for more than anybody else.
Your decision to include Trent Green, and I know I saw you afterwards with your NFL Network brethren talking about that, but for the fans to understand what Trent Green meant to you and how it was that you decided to include him in your speech.
Well, I mean, the whole speech, if you listen to it, it was getting away from what everybody knows and, the people or the places or the stories that everybody has heard before. Because so often, with all of us that find ourselves in these places, there's particular people and there's particular stories that really shaped us as individuals. And that's what I wanted to do was touch on those people that never get thanked or never get mentioned or people don't hear about. And make sure that they got their moment. Because to me, that's what this was all about, is I know everybody was looking at me and celebrating me. For me, I wanted to celebrate them and wanted to thank them because whether they knew it or not, some of those stories, some of the people, I'm sure they knew the stories, but maybe didn't know the impact that it had on me. And Trent, I'm sure, was one of them. that sometimes Trent gets lost in the shuffle. And what people don't remember is there was a time Trent was teaching school and then got another chance with the Washington Redskins and then got his chance with the Rams. You know, so it was a similar story to me, and then he suffers the injury, and then I take over, and we do what we do, and he's kind of a forgotten piece in there.
Right.
But who he was and what he displayed and how he helped me was so instrumental. And then what people also forget is that, yeah, I was there at that time, and I got to be the one that took over, but then I found myself in similar situations to Trent two or three times throughout my career from there. And what I watched with him and how he handled that situation and the character that he showed was something that that really left a big impression on me. And so as I faced those different situations, yeah, there were times you're angry and you were upset and you wanted to, you know, be the one in there and you wanted to scream. But at the end of the day, you realize, and I realized, how big of impact I could have on other people in those situations, very much like Trent had on me. And it helped to sharpen who I wanted to be and to make some of those decisions that I made along the way. So, I'm sure some people, you know, why didn't you thank, you know, Marshall and Larry and those guys? And, you know, I like to think that those guys know how grateful I am for them. And I think everybody else knows and you know, and they get their due. These people that I tried to share the speech with were ones that didn't get their due, and I wanted to make sure that they got their moment.
That's interesting. I know Al Luganbill well. We're actually related. And
oh, really?
Yeah. It's just a small world, like third cousins, and had him over at San Diego State. And we had Mike Martz on a couple of weeks ago about you, and he shared the story of how you got kicked out of a drill for something that wasn't your fault, but he wanted to test your mettle and how tough you were. And the lineman came over to you afterwards and said, hey, it wasn't your fault. He wanted to share that story. Isaac Bruce, we had on. Marshall, we had on. All talking different ways about you. And so to hear the names of Al Luganbill, and you thanked Coach Martz, and Trent Green, I thought that was really cool. And that was a deep dive, in my view. So you had to put a lot of time in on this.
I did. And, you know, like I said, I went back and just said, okay, what were the moments? Because the biggest question I was asked throughout the entire week is, how did you keep going? Why did you keep going?
Right.
You know, how did you have the wherewithal to face those situations and keep moving forward? And that to me was what the speech was. It was those moments, those things I remember, those things I was taught. Because at the end of the day, you know, we all go through struggles, and the way we get through struggles is through what we've learned and who we've become and how we are able to apply that to the situation that we're in. And that's what I tried to do, is those different moments that I was in, that I was struggling with, somebody showed up, you know, in different ways, teaching me something different. And it was those somebodies that ultimately got me to where I was. Because everybody knows the story from once I took over and won the Super Bowl and all that. To me, the important part was why I was there and how I got there. And that was the journey that I wanted to take people on. So hopefully they went on that journey with me and they understand that's what I was trying to do. And, you know, again, the theme was moments. You know, moments matter. And for us to take advantage of them, and so often we look at it going, well, I got to take advantage of my moment to accomplish my dream. But there's another side of that, and you got to take advantage of your moment to impact other people. When we have that chance, like all these people did, they took advantage of their moment, and those moments that impacted me ended up shaping me and allowing me to have this amazing platform that I have.
Talking with Kurt Warner, a couple other questions. I'll let you go, and I appreciate your time following what was an emotionally taxing weekend, I'm sure. Sitting there and being the last one to speak, okay, and I know it's been written now there should be time limits. I don't agree with that. I think that it's your moment, and to put time limits on speeches, that's a difficult thing to balance. What
right.
did you do for those 4 hours plus, and do you think you were a little nervous before it got started because you were the last one, it took forever to get to you?
A lot of things. You know, I mean, I tried to sit there and listen to the other guys and hear their story. I think the most disappointing part, and I don't know if you want to call it nerves or you know, whatever, when you get up there is when you're the last one and you're 4.5 hours in,
yep,
and you finally get up there and there's nobody there, you know, the stands in front of you are empty to a degree. You know, I wish they would have moved my family over or something so at least I could give the speech to somebody. I think that was the most disappointing part, is that you've waited so long for this moment and you want to share this moment. And you know, I think there was a part of me that kind of forgot there was people watching home on TV, because you want to experience it there. And, you know, you watch people after their guy speaks, get up and leave and get up and leave and get up and leave. I think that was the most disappointing part. And so I think that lack of energy, or maybe me allowing that moment to disappoint me a little bit, I think affected, just how I wanted to perform the speech when I was up there. So it was hard from that standpoint, because you were hoping, and I really liked the words that I put together. I wish I would have been able to kind of throw that aside and perform it a little bit better than I had. It was a long day from that standpoint. And I guess that's what I wish more than anything, that just if it was shorter so people could just stay and engaged and everybody have the same opportunity to speak to the masses as the first person that was up.
Yeah. Well, I thought you did fine. I just think that's a really tough spot for anybody to be in, following all those one after the next. What advice would you give to the ones that you know that are going to go into the hall, like Isaac and Larry? I mean, and I know the voting hasn't taken place. I'm just going to look at those two and say, come on, this is going to happen. Yeah. What advice would you give those guys when they have their turn?
I think two things. I think the first thing is just enjoy the people and, you know, take advantage of, you know, this wealth of knowledge and the guys that laid the groundwork for you, and enjoy them, because that was, to me, the best part of it. When it comes to the speech, I think it's just tell your story. And then my piece of advice, you know, would be forget about the people in front of you and understand that there's a bunch of people watching. Mm-hmm. Because I wish I would have, you know, really recognized and grasped that, a little bit more. So not letting whatever the emotions are in the stadium affect your emotions or what you're trying to do with your speech, but tell your story. I think that's the coolest part of, you know, the whole night, is sitting there and listening to what I didn't know. You listen to LT and he talks about, you know, running into Emmitt Smith. And, you know, from my viewpoint, Emmitt Smith was right behind him at the podium, and watching, you know, two Hall of Famers and how that impact, and how that moment shaped his career, you know, or Terrell Davis, you know, talking about quitting and you know, looking down the barrel of a shotgun and how that affects things. It was all night long, you know, it was about different moments that shaped these guys or turned them a certain direction and got them there. And that, to me, is the coolest part, because, you know, as much as I work with these guys and know these guys, I don't know that side of the story. And so that's what I would encourage everybody is tell us something that we don't know and share with us really what it was that got you here, because the people that are watching, you know, somebody's going to find themselves in a similar situation and have heard that story and go, oh, so-and-so was there. I can work through this and achieve my ultimate dream as well.
Before I let you go, circling back to football, what are you expecting out of the football team here in Arizona this season? We all know the storylines of age with Bruce and Carson and Larry. What are you expecting this year?
I'm not really sure. I mean, I think they have a really solid team. I think there were some losses that they went through, the secondary and what have you, where you go, okay, will these young guys come in and be able to live up to the billing in the first year? I think you're excited about David Johnson, and you wonder if this team can become a run-first, dominate the line of scrimmage, and let Carson and the big plays be a complement to the running game. The wide receivers, you know, Larry's going to be there, but, I think one of the problems last year was that nobody really stepped up in that secondary position and took the pressure off Larry and made it easier on Carson. And, so I'm watching to see, John Brown's back to where he was a couple years ago and some of these other things. But until you go out there and prove it on Sundays, it doesn't matter. So I think there's some exciting things about this team, and I think they're going to be a really good team. But how good they're going to be and whether they're able to make a run like they did a couple years ago, I think is going to depend on those key positions of question marks I have right now on will those guys or which guys will step up and play to the level that they need if they're going to be competitive in the NFC.
It's always fun talking to a Hall of Famer. Congratulations and well done. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it.
Kurt Warner there with us. Now the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Kurt Warner. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Our television show, Brad Sesmat Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona, 16 airings this week. We appreciate the partnership with them. Our sponsors, you see them. Here we are self-funded. Without them, we don't do this. It's coming up on 6 years. So we appreciate our partners that say we believe in what you're doing over there at Sports360AZ.com. Check out our website. There's content that pops up 24/7, 365. Not just doing scores of games and stuff like that. We're going deeper dives on things, and you'll hear that interview again with Kurt in its entirety on this podcast that repeats over and over and over. Have yourself a great day. Thanks for checking out this podcast on Sports360AZ.com, brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers.